I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Roman Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out, romanoz.com.au.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, we've got a bit of a surprise for the listeners. This week, we are actually going to take them on a journey along the Lachlan River Walk across the suspension bridge in Hillston, and we're going to tell them all about the fauna and flora that occupy this area.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
Very interesting.
And then we're going to chat to Malachi Quinn from the Campbelltown Joggers.
Campbelltown Joggers in Hillston?
Yes, they're not really joggers, so stay tuned for that one.
They're not actually joggers.
No.
I hope they haven't jogged from Campbelltown to Hillston.
No.
And then lastly, Lynn, we're going to catch up again with David and Martina, our couple that are travelling around Australia doing the big lap.
Yes, and where are they?
They're actually going to be in Byron Bay and Fraser Island.
Oh, how exciting.
Look, this is a really interesting show, and with a great selection of music, as selected by the people we interview.
That's correct.
So, Lynn, what do you reckon?
On with the show!
Phil C here, listeners, and we're in Hillston. Is that right, Lynn?
That's correct, Phil.
And we're at the Desathlon Park, which is along the Lachlan River Walking Trail. So what I want you to do if you come and have a look at this is enjoy the distinctive surroundings along the banks of the Lachlan River as it meanders through this part of Hillston, New South Wales. The Lachlan River Walking Trail is a circular route of 1,200 metres and starts as you cross the river from town via the swing bridge.
The bridge was initially constructed in 1993 as a local community project and has allowed both locals and visitors easy access to various parts of the Lachlan Riverside. The bridge was refurbished in 2019 as part of the Walking Trail project.
The park has been used for various recreational purposes since 1935. Now there have been family gatherings and events held in these surroundings over the past 80 years.
In the early 1990s, two local Hillston stalwarts, Des Shivers and Athol Palmer, were the driving force of the development of the picnic area and then was named Desathlon Park, named after them.
Okay, so Des and Athol carved large-scale fantasy figures such as dragons and spiders from the local river, Red Gum, which surrounds along the trail.
These figures were painted in vivid bright colours and were the source of many a ghost story at twilight picnics alongside the river. The figures, along with the earlier bridge and swimming baths, have not survived the ravages of time and floods, but are incorporated for posterity in the interpretive panels located along the walking trail.
So there you go, listeners, something to see if you're in Hillston. And as you can hear in the background, there are hundreds of corellas flying overhead. It's a nice place to bring the dog and just have a meander along the famous Lachlan River. So for anybody that's interested in fishing, swimming amongst the snags and deep holes of the Lachlan River in Hillston is the yellowbelly. Now that's a medium-sized yellow or gold-coloured fish found throughout the Murray-Darling River system.
The yellowbelly grows from 40 to 50 centimetres long, weighing in at around 4 to 5 kilos.
Now, yellowbelly are carnivorous, okay? So they feed on smaller fish and microcrustaceans, including yabbies, shrimps, frogs, small fish and aquatic invertebrates.
The yellowbelly is sometimes regarded as a moody fish by anglers, possibly due to its reluctance or even indifference of taking offered bait from the angler's hook. Maybe moody should be changed to smart.
Absolutely. Now, yellowbelly happily continue to trend of many native fish in the Murray-Darling system of being well long-lived. This longevity is a survival strategy in the increasing, though, Australian river environment, which ensures that most adults can participate in at least one exceptional spawning and recruitment event. Luckily, yellowbellies. These events are often linked to unusually weird La Nina events and may only occur every one or two decades. So you would have heard that plane flying overhead, folks, I'm sure, as well as all those corellas. As I said before, there's hundreds of them just circling above us and sitting in the branches above the beautiful trees along this walkway.
The sacred kingfisher, frequently seen along the banks of the Lachlan River, is the sacred kingfisher. She is 19 to 23 centimetres long, has a turquoise back, turquoise blue rump and a tall buff white underpants with a broad cream collar.
Now, contrary to her name, she seldom eats fish but usually hunts insects, small lizards, rodents, ground-dwelling beetles, and there are even a few reports of them eating small finches.
Usually the bird will sit on a low red gum branch and wait for prey to pass by. She swoops down to grab the prey and returns to a perch to eat.
Originally from the Western Pacific, the sacred kingfisher is called sacred, for she was said to be a holy bird for Polynesians who believed her to have control over the waves of the ocean.
Most of the year, sacred kingfishers are mainly solitary, pairing only for the breeding season. Once a pair has mated, both members of the pair dig the nest, a burrow in a riverbank. A large empty branch or a termite mound by prime examples. The female lays about 5 eggs and both birds incubate the eggs and take care of the young.
The sacred kingfisher is an attractive member of the birdlife family who live along the Lachlan River here in Hillston. Pelicans are frequent visitors, sometimes even long-term residents of the Lachlan River here in Hillston. Pelicans are highly mobile, searching out suitable areas of water and an adequate supply of food. Pelicans can maintain in their air for 24 hours, capable of covering hundreds of kilometres.
Pelicans mainly eat fish here on the Lachlan, but they are opportunistic feeders and eat a variety of aquatic animals, including crustaceans, tadpoles and turtles. They readily accept handouts from humans and a number of unusual items have been recorded in their diet. During periods of drought and extreme conditions, pelicans have been reported catching and eating other birds and ducklings. The birds are held underwater and drowned before being eaten head first. Pelicans will also rob other birds of their prey. They are tough critters.
On a softer note though, a pelican with romance on his mind is a sight to behold. He always has his bill from side to side and ripples his bill pouch as he tries to impress the subject of his affection. Eventually, he will share the incubation of the eggs on a nest consisting of a few sticks scraped together on exposed ground. Whilst food is abundant and the weather is right, pelicans will continue to breed and raise the next generations of these spectacular birds.
Male pelicans are larger than females. The most characteristic feature of pelicans is the elongated bill with its massive throat pouch. The pelican's bill is 40 to 50 centimetres long and is larger in males than females. The pelican is a welcome visitor here in Hillston, providing an almost comic backdrop as they calmly go about their business on the Lachlan River.
Now, having what we've said about the kingfisher and the pelican, I should point out that along this walk so far we've not spotted either. All we seem to be surrounded with is hundreds of corellas. Now, the goanna is a member of the monitor lizard family and is a common sight around this area. He's a large lizard and can reach up to 2 metres or 7 feet in total length and weigh as much as 14 kilograms or 30 pounds in the old scale in weight. Even though being on the large side of the reptile family, goannas are adept climbers, both in the hunt for feed or to escape potential dangers such as inquisitive walkers. An interesting feature of this impressive reptile is that he is only lizard to have a forked tongue.
Goannas are usually dark grey to dull bluish-black in colour with numerous scattered cream-coloured spots. The head is black and the snout is marked with prominent black and yellow bands extending under the chin and neck. The tail has narrow black and cream bands which are narrow and get wider towards the end of the tail.
Goannas like the ecosystem of the Lachlan River Walk, trail and often shelter in trees and hollows and under fallen trees or large rocks. The goanna has a broad and varied diet, which includes birds, insects, bird eggs, reptiles and small mammals. They will readily feed on carrion, including roadkills, gorging themselves when the opportunity arises. After a large feed, they are able to go for many weeks without feeding again.
Even though the goanna is an imposing critter, he prefers to run away from danger, usually quickly up a tree, and doesn't present any danger to curious walkers. However, their eyesight isn't that great and they have been known to mistake curious humans for trees and have attempted to climb them for safety. which can be painful and distressing for all.
Absolutely, folks. So if you do see a goanna, don't startle it. Just let it go about its business. And if you leave him alone, he's going to leave you alone.
Often seen as the yellow rosella among the river red gum foliage here on the Lachlan River, the colours are predominantly yellow with blue cheeks, a mainly blue tail, many blue wing feathers and a bright red frontal band above her beak. She grows to around 35 centimetres in length.
Her dietary needs are simple and usually found amongst the red gum foliage, and she doesn't often venture down on the ground to feed, unlike other rosellas.
Despite feeding on fruits and seeds, rosellas are not useful to the plants as seed spreaders because they crush and destroy the seeds in the process of eating them. Their diet often puts them at odds with our farmers whose fruit and grain harvest can be damaged by the birds, which has resulted in a large number of rosellas being shot in the past. Rosellas will also eat many insects and their larvae, including termites, aphids, beetles, weevils, caterpillars, moths and water boatmen.
Now, from a breeding perspective, the yellow rosella extends her favours not only to other yellow rosellas in the district, she often readily interbreeds with other rosellas such as the crimson rosella wherever they may meet.
One of the other creatures in the area is the shingleback lizard or bog eye. He's a common sight here. He is a short-tailed, slow-moving version of the blue-tongued skink. The bog eye has a heavily armoured body and can be found in various colours ranging from dark brown to cream.
He has a short, wide, stumpy tail and resembles its head and may confuse predators. The tail also contains fat reserves which are known upon during the hibernation in winter. The skink is an omnivore. He eats snails and plants and spends much of his time browsing through vegetation for food. He's often seen sunning on roadsides or our other paved areas.
Sometimes he dares to cross busy roads, thinking his heavy armour will protect him from predators. Sadly, he sometimes loses out to fast-moving cars.
So look out for our local bog-eyed lizard. He does a wonderful job in our local ecosystem, and we like him being around. Now, one thing to enjoy is the shade of the River Red Gums as you move along the Lachlan River walking trail here in Hillston. The dominant tree species is along this part of the Lachlan River floodplain. It's the mighty River Red Gum, or eucalypt.
River Red Gum is a common and widespread tree along watercourses over much of mainland Australia. It is frequently a dominant component to riparian communities, is an iconic and important species for the Murray-Darling catchment, both ecologically and economically.
Eucalyptus camaldolensis is a perennial, single-stemmed, large-bulb, medium-sized to tall tree to 30 metres tall, with some trees being recorded up to a lofty 45 metres. Some of these tree giants can live up to 500 years or sometimes up to as long as 1,000 years, Lenny.
River Red Gum forests are historically and culturally important to the traditional owners. The bark of the River Red Gum trees are often used for making canoes and shields and other artefacts.
River Red Gum is a versatile, durable and dense hardwood that is used for fencing, house construction, making furniture, decking and flooring because of its beautiful light to red dark heartwood. It is also excellent firewood. In fact, many Hillston locals believe that there isn't anything finer than forest red gum to keep the winter chill at bay.
Eucalyptus grow readily along the rivers of the Murray-Darling Basin, and as they do so well here in Hillston, they provide shade and cooling for all.
Another one for the anglers, Linny. In this particular river is the large Murray cod. He's a predatory fish which hangs around the outback rivers such as this Lachlan River here in Hillston. He's the apex predator, which means he's the big boss of the Murray River Darling River system.
The Murray cod are white to cream in colour on their belly surfaces. Their backs and flanks are usually yellowish green to green, overlain with heavier, darker green mottling. The effect is a marbled appearance, sometimes resembling a leopard's marking.
The Murray cod is a long-lived fish and has been recorded at 48 years of age. He mainly eats other fish and can measure up to 1.8 metres in length, but usually reaches around 80 centimetres to 100 centimetres. Top weight of the Murray cod is recorded at a whopping 113 kilograms. There is an urban myth that many Murray cod once grew to such a size that they couldn't be turned around in their rivers and had a weight for a flood event to swim back downstream to breed.
Being the boss fish of the river system means the Murray cod will eat almost anything smaller than himself and anything in his way. He has been known to eat ducks, cormorants, turtles, water dragons, snakes, mice and frogs. This is apart from his usual diet of all things fishy. He also helps out our riverine ecosystem by even chowing down on the dreaded European carp.
Now, the Murray cod was once the most common large native fish in Australia. Sadly, overfishing in the early 1900s saw rapid declines in fish members which have never fully recovered. For example, in 1918, over 1 million kilograms of fish was caught and sent to the Melbourne markets alone. Gradually, fish numbers diminished until governments introduced protective measures to ensure the Murray cod's survival. There are now stringent controls on legal size, bag limits, as well as fingerling release programs across the whole Murray-Darling Basin.
River couva, a common tree species along this part of the Lachlan River floodplain, is the river couva or Acacia stenophyllia. River couva is a frequent part of watercourse fringing vegetation in inland arid areas of eastern Australia, such as here in Hillston along the Lachlan River. A small tree with a somewhat weeping habit, it is tolerant of saline, alkaline and waterlogged soils and survives periodic flooding.
The river couva has a creamy yellow flowers and are often a feature of this part of the floodplain during the winter months. Pods of the river couva were often roasted in a fire and the seeds, which are relatively large and nourishing, were eaten by the traditional owners, the Wiradjuri. The woods is likely to have been used for clubs and boomerangs.
River couva was used for fencing during the early development of the Hillston area, but is currently little used as a structural timber species. However, the timber is considered to have a great potential in the craft wood and specialty timber markets. Woodworkers prize the timber for its hard, close grain, which takes fine polish and is useful for handmade furniture making.
River couva is an important part of our riparian ecosystem and is increasingly used elsewhere for windbreaks, shelter, shade, mine site rehabilitation and soil stabilisation purposes.
Enjoy the shade and sometimes blossoms of the River couva as you move along the Lachlan River Walking Trail here in Hillston.
Oh, listeners, as I look up into the sky, I said hundreds, it looks like thousands flying above us. And what a din, what a sound. Absolutely incredible. Flying in formation. Now, as that flock of corellas disappear into the distance, the sound above our head was almost deafening. Entrance and exit points of the walk is via the Hillston Swing Bridge, which was constructed in 1993. Now, give yourselves a good half an hour. It's only 1,200 metres, just over a kilometre. There's a lot to read on the walk, and also just enjoy and take in the ambience of the walk. Pets are allowed, so your little four-legged fur baby is more than welcome to go along with you, and just enjoy the whole place, the river. And of course, those screaming, yelling corellas. This is Phil C, listeners.
And Lynn.
And we are still roaming Oz. Well, before we continue roaming Oz, listeners, we have to put a song up now. What do you think we should play, Lynn?
Oh, I don't know. What about Something Among the Gum Trees? Well, who's that?
Johnny Williamson, Home Among the Gum Trees.
That's it.
All right, stick around for that, listeners, and we'll be back with more roaming Oz.
Sing it for Steve now. I've been around the world a couple of times or maybe more. Seen the sights, I've had delights on every foreign shore. But when my mates all ask me the place that I adore, I tell them right away. What do we tell them? Give me a home among the gum trees, with lots of plum trees. A sheep, a tuak, a kangaroo, a clothesline out the back, veranda out the front, and an old rocking chair. You can see me in the kitchen cooking up a roast of Vegemite on toast. Just you and me, a cup of tea, later on we'll settle down and go out on the porch and watch the possums play. Give me a home among the gum trees with lots of plum trees, a sheep, a tuak, a kangaroo, a clothesline out the back, veranda out the front, and an old rocking chair. There's a Safeway's up the corner and a Woolies down the street, and a brand new place they've opened up, and they regulate the heat. But I'd trade them all tomorrow for a little bush retreat where the kookaburras call. Give me a home among the gum trees with lots of plum trees, a sheep, a tuak, a kangaroo, a clothesline out the back, veranda out the front, and an old rocking chair. Some people like their houses with fences all around, others live in mansions and some beneath the ground. But me, I like the bush, you know, with rabbits running round and a pumpkin vine out the back. By yourselves now. Give me a home among the gum trees with lots of plum trees, a sheep, a tuak, a kangaroo, a clothesline out the back, veranda out the front, and an old rocking chair.
One more for Steve.
A plum tree, a sheep, a tuak, a kangaroo, a clothesline out the back, veranda out the front, and an old rocking chair.
Oh, well, there you go, listeners. Without a doubt, one of my most favourite singers, Mr. Johnny Williamson. And a great song, Home Among the Gum Trees. Now, listeners, we are going to continue on with Malachi Quinn.
Oh, welcome back, listeners. Phil C. here from Roman Oz, and I'm with Malachi Quinn, and he's from the Campbelltown Joggers. Now, you might think joggers running, but actually these guys are bicycle riders, aren't you? You're cyclists.
Correct.
Is that right?
Correct.
Okay, so tell us all about what you're doing out here.
Now, we're going from Griffith to Mount Hope,
okay,
and then back into Griffith. So we're doing 440 k's on the bike,
okay,
and we're doing it to prepare ourselves for a ride from Darwin to Adelaide in July.
Darwin to Adelaide in July.
Yeah.
Okay,
so it's about 3,000 k's.
Okay, so we are actually at Hilston.
Correct.
Now Hilston to Griffith, where you started. How far is that?
106 k's.
So you did 106 k's today in the saddle.
Yeah.
And that was roughly, what would you say, about 8 hours in the saddle?
Yeah, what time did we leave, guys?
8 o'clock.
8 o'clock.
So 8 o'clock.
And we got back?
4 o'clock.
4 o'clock.
8 o'clock so till 4 o'clock, yeah?
Yeah.
So what's that, 8 hours?
It's about that, yeah.
You didn't ride for 8 hours, though, did you? You had a stop along the way.
We had a couple of stops, yeah, but pretty much, I mean, when you're doing that sort of mileage, you've got to keep moving. So,
okay.
Yeah, we had a couple of breaks, but we got the mileage in.
All right. Now how many's in your crew? We got a few gentlemen here.
I think we've got about 10.
10 in the crew for this one?
Yeah.
So there's about three or four ladies.
It's a lot of them are couples as well, you know, husband and wife sort of thing. So we've known each other for a long time.
Right.
Because we were joggers. We used to be runners before we were cyclists.
Okay.
So we've known each other for probably a lot of us, 20, 30 years.
So why did you get out of jogging and get into cycling?
There wasn't a lot of choice, because when your knees seize up or become arthritic,
right,
you can either give it in because you can't run, or you can find something else you can do. So we found cycling is easier on the body.
Yep.
And you can do that. We were distance runners, like marathons, half marathons. So with the cycling, you can go out there and you can do 100 k's. You can do eight hours in the saddle, you know.
Okay.
And I guess that's what we're looking for, not a 5 minute sort of exercise, more
long distance.
Exactly.
Endurance.
Exactly.
All right. So you're on the road for how long with this trip? Is this a warm up?
A week.
So a week of cycling.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And this is a warm up to what?
to cycling from Darwin to Adelaide in July.
And how far is it from Darwin to Adelaide?
It's about 3,300 kilometres.
And how long do you think you're going to need for a trip like that?
We're going to take about 40 days, we reckon.
40 days?
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Plus a few stops here and there.
I would hope so.
And a few sherbets along the way.
And hopefully a good backward wind to help you along.
It'd help.
It would help. Is it very hilly country where you're going,
no,
or where you've been?
It's
or?
Flat, and that's why we're cycling in this area, because it's so flat, straight roads.
Okay.
You know, you're going to have that for hour on hour. So when we do the Darwin to Adelaide, mm-hmm. it'll be the same thing. Flat as a tack, straight roads. A bit boring, to be honest with you.
Okay.
But that's part of the challenge.
Okay.
And we can find similar conditions here from Griffith to where we are today.
Which tonight is, of course, Hilston.
Correct.
Hilston.
I'm glad you threw that in.
Oh, I had to. I had to think of it. I had to look, though, because I've got to tell you. So the gentleman that just turned the music on, he drives your...
Yeah, he's our support
man. He's your support man.
Yeah.
He's got
he's
the vehicle.
Our roadie.
He's the roadie.
He's the roadie.
All right, okay. And what about if you have injuries? Does he, like, bandage you up and...
No, we wouldn't allow him to do that.
You wouldn't
no.
allow him to bandage you up?
No.
All right.
He's good at providing a drink. But,
okay.
We have beer or two. But,
okay.
But we don't have too many. We've not had too many accidents or things like that.
No.
Not that it doesn't happen, but we've been lucky so far, and we take our time.
And you got repairs. I noticed this gentleman here. He's sorting out his wheel and putting on a new tire or a new inner tube.
He's doing his best.
Right? Uh huh.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Sorry,
that's the support crew. Okay. He's come along to offer us a Band-Aid, all right.
Yeah, so you do get some mechanical problems.
Of course.
But obviously you try and prepare yourself for that, and hopefully... Because I guess if you're on, like, particularly mountain from Darwin to Adelaide, there's no backup.
No.
You know, you've got to be self-sufficient.
I understand.
Essentially, right? There's no shops to pop into and stuff like that. So that's what we aim to do.
So you carry, obviously, in the support vehicle, which you're towing a trailer, you've obviously got tyres, spare wheels.
Yeah.
I suppose... Saddle, maybe not.
Not so much that, but certainly the big problems are tyres and the inner tubes.
Well, obviously they wear out, obviously.
Yeah, and you get punctures.
You get punctures.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's easier to just throw it out than repair it, I guess.
Well, sometimes it is, because sometimes Eric's struggling at the moment trying to fix his, but he didn't just pick up one puncture, he got about six or seven at the same time.
Oh, okay.
Mario. So he's got a bigger challenge to fix that.
So the whole tyre is... Is
it's
a throw out.
Probably ratchet.
Yeah, absolutely throw it out. All right, so can I ask you how old you are?
Yeah, 74.
74. And are you the...
Don't say it like that.
Well, I'm thinking... No, I'm saying...
If it was 94, then you can say 94.
No, but I mean 74, riding a bicycle for 3,500 kilometres on that next race, that's quite a feat. That's a feat, don't you think? I mean, I'm saying that with the utmost respect.
Well, we're just talking about it now. We've still got to do it, you know. It's easy talking
I've
about
got
it.
Every faith in you. I can see the support crew, the Band-Aid man, sitting there smiling, wondering why he didn't get picked for this chat. So what's the average age then of the riders?
I suppose it's around about 61,
68. 68? Okay. Comes from
68.
One of the ladies. So 68 is the average age.
Yeah.
What's the oldest member of your group?
Me, unfortunately.
You, unfortunately. Yeah, okay, yeah, I'll take that one back. Yeah. What's the youngest member of your group?
Kevin's 34. What
I'm 58. You're 58? See, cycling suits her. She doesn't look 58. You don't look 70. Did you say 70? 74?
74.
Wow, see, it's fitness. It's all... He's an actor? He doesn't act his age, no. I can tell that when you all pointed to him and said, he's the biggest clown. But you're also the secretary of the group captain?
No, we don't have any of that sort of official stuff.
So what's your position? You just...
We haven't.
Always in the rear following
younger
ones?
No, just cyclists. We're just a group of... We're not a club as such.
Okay.
You know, I suppose we are.
Campbelltown. Well, you said the Joggers Club.
The Joggers Club,
Campbelltown,
that's right.
Joggers Club.
But as I say, we're kind of all has-been joggers.
Okay.
So now we're just moving on to something else.
Has-been. That means you were famous at some stage.
No. We were just... But we did do a lot of half marathons, that sort of stuff. Long kiss and stuff. So they in our time, we've been good in our day, but we're just... We're just moving on.
We're just moving on gracefully. And this other gentleman here directly opposite us, he said, what's his name, this chap here?
Ted.
Ted. Now, Ted said if you add all our ages up together, what was the answer to that question, Ted? If you add everybody's age up together?
What's the average?
Bloody lot.
It's a bloody lot, yeah.
It'll be over 500.
Be over 500.
700.
Is anybody there for 720? It's not an auction. No, it's a chat with some really fun, interesting people. Look, I wish you well.
Thank you.
I hope you do really, really well. Have you got anything else coming up other than this Adelaide trip?
No, we think that's enough.
That'll be enough for this year. But you're always going to be doing it, obviously.
Well,
which one?
Oh, yeah, we did France a couple of years ago. We did from Saint-Malo in the north of France down to Nice in the south. So that was 1,700 kilometres we did.
France is pretty hilly?
It's really hilly.
Really rugged,
really,
aren't you?
It is a struggle. I mean, compared to this, which is flat as anything, it's like every day it was a challenge. Yeah.
So what would be your average speed?
I can tell you, today it was probably 22.4 kilometres.
22.4, very precise, isn't it?
22.4. Yeah, well, I'll have a little readout which tells me so.
So you're not going to get booked for speeding?
No.
And if we stand here and drink many more of these, you might get arrested for being over the affluence of Inca Hole. What do you reckon?
That's easy for you to say.
It is indeed. Mate, thank you so much for
your
time. It's been a wonderful conversation with you and your group. Thank you all for taking the time to chat with us. Now, I'm going to play you a song. It's got to be Aussie. Who's your favourite band?
He's the maestro. Midnight Oil we're going to play.
You're going to play Midnight Oil?
Yeah,
that's
the song you just heard.
The song we just heard.
Dead Heart.
All right.
Dead Heart by Midnight Oil.
We're going to the Dead Heart.
We're going to the Dead Heart, listeners, by Midnight Oil. Stick around for more Roman Oz straight after that.
Yeah.
well, there you go, listeners. Go into the Dead Heart by Midnight Oil. And that was requested by the Campbelltown Joggers. And that conversation, of course, Malachi Quinn. Thank you so much for your time, Mel. Hope you enjoyed the song. And now, listeners, we are going to catch up with David Martina doing the big lap currently at Byron Bay and then heading to Fraser Island. Oh, hello, listeners. Phil C here, and this is Roaming Oz, and we are with David and Martina. Now, if you've tuned into us over the last month or so, you would have been listening to their track. They're going all around Australia. They're doing the big lap, and they're currently at Byron Bay, and they said they were going to go to the brewery last time we spoke. Although, David, you did say you were on a budget, so you weren't going to allow Martina to drink too much. How are you, guys?
Fantastic, Phil. Great to hear from
you.
It's so good to catch up with you guys again. You're now at Byron Bay. And tell me, did you guys end up getting to the brewery? And did Martina, did David allow you to sample all those ales you were after?
Well, the brewery was an interesting one. When we pulled up at the brewery that Martina really wanted to go to, what happened, Martina?
Yeah, it was closed.
Just for the day? What do you mean it was closed? What, for the day or what happened?
No, because it wasn't open to public.
Uh-huh.
They just didn't run like any like kind of tasting or anything because of the COVID.
Because of COVID, actually, they closed down. Yeah, they said it sort of restricted them in some sort of a way. So, unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah, so we went to the other one, the one called Stone and Wood.
Yeah,
that one was really good.
Okay.
Really like that.
So what did you sample there, Martina? What was your delights in that one?
I kind of like get like all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she got the tasting paddle.
Yeah.
The tasting paddle.
Oh. And it wasn't a small one, I'll tell you right now. It was a big one. We didn't expect that big of glasses, hey? And they brought out these large glasses and we thought, oh, dear.
Okay.
Maybe had to help me.
So,
I was on hand to lend a hand.
So what was the name of the brewery you went to again, sorry?
Stone and Wood.
Stone and Wood. And that's in Byron Bay, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay,
yes, correct,
and you went in there for a sample. They gave you a paddle, and you had how many on the paddle? Was it like three glasses?
That was five of them, five glasses all up. So you got to choose from the whole selection, and Martina chose sort of from the lightest to some dark ales. And, like I said, it was a quite a large serving, and it was only $20 or something, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, $20, and for what you got, it was very, very good, yeah.
Fantastic.
I highly recommend it if your listeners are going through there.
Yep.
Apparently they do a great feed as well, and
the
beer was fantastic.
Okay. And you didn't, obviously, David, you being the driver, you would have been responsible. So you just looked at Martina as she put down five glasses of beer.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, crikeys. Okay, well, I can only but imagine she would have been wobbling out the door, so I hope you had a shoulder for her to get her back to the...
Oh, absolutely, a shoulder and dragging her behind me.
So what else about Byron Bay did you like? Did you stay there for very long, or how long were you actually there?
Well, Byron was absolutely stunning place where we stayed. We were lucky enough that a family friend of ours put her onto her parents-in-law, who have a stunning property at the back of Byron on a road called Coolerman Scenic Drive, which overlooks the entire Byron, the bay there, and looks out to all the beaches, and I think Brunswick Heads it's called out there.
Yep.
So we stayed on their property, and we were only supposed to stay a couple of days, but we ended up staying like 1 or 2 days, but I think we were there for 3 or 4.
Mm-hmm.
And they sort of gave us all the local knowledge, you know, make sure you check out this place and this beach, and don't go to this beach, you know. All the city folk go down to this beach and it's too busy, you know. All the people from Brisbane and Gold Coast and Sydney and Melbourne, they all come up here and it's too busy. So they told us where to go for a good surf beach and a fishing beach and a good walk. And obviously we walked up to, what do we do, the lighthouse?
The most eastern part of Australia.
Yeah, went to the most easterly part, Signs.
Yes.
We're doing all the cardinal points around the whole country. So.
Yes.
We've gone to the most eastern one.
Mm-hmm.
The other one was the Waterfalls. What were they called?
Protester Falls.
Protester Falls, yeah. Okay. Yep. So I went to Protester Falls out of Byron. That's a very, very nice one.
Mm-hmm.
And a very good history, actually, behind it. It's called Protester Falls due to, I think in the 50s or 60s, they wanted to log the entire rainforest through there. And
yes.
A bunch of protesters stood in front of the bulldozers, and they were sort of locked the heads, and eventually the government gave in, and they've now protected the entire area, which is fantastic, because you have, you know, this gorgeous rainforest with waterfalls and a beautiful walk in there you can do.
Yep.
Left for everybody to enjoy, rather than, you know, it had been logged back then.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, so that was interesting. Now, what about these beaches? Are you going to keep them private to yourself, or are you going to share some of these lovely beaches?
No, Donnie, the friend of ours that lives there, he's 72 years old, and
yep.
he's lived there, he's born and bred there, and
yep.
he surfs still every single morning. He gets up every morning, goes for his surf
yep.
and whatnot. He's just a fantastic guy, and so is Jill, his wife. And there was a very good surfer each at the back there that he did recommend at the back of Byron. He said the main one, he said it gets too crowded and isn't a great break on there.
Mm-hmm.
But the back one, yeah, he said that was the go-to for all the locals.
Okay, so all the locals go there and all the tourists yeah. go to the other ones.
Exactly.
And they keep that beach pretty much to themselves, I guess, because they don't want
to. Themselves, yep. yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Now, one place that probably everybody goes to on the bucket list when they're heading to the top is Fraser Island. Now, you did visit Fraser, and that's one of the places that's been on your bucket list for a while, and mine as well. Tell us about Fraser, because you spent a bit of time on that, didn't you?
Fraser, we could go on Fraser for about half an hour, I think. Fraser's been, yeah, certainly on the bucket list for a long time. Friends have done it, you know, on and off for a couple of week trip and whatnot. So we thought while we're driving up north, it's a big, big must, you know, we must check it out. So getting from Byron, between Byron and Fraser was an interesting one. Brisbane had a lot of roadworks. So we spent hours and hours on the bloody road trying to get past. But anyway, eventually we got through and pulled into Rainbow Beach and Inskip. And obviously, you know, everybody sort of says, don't get bogged at Inskip, you know, make sure your tire pressure's all right. And don't be that wally that gets bogged right at the entrance and blocks everybody in. And they can't get to the barge. So we promptly pulled up and aired down to about 16, 17 PSI and pulled onto the sand. And I'm thinking, this feels fine. This feels like I'm driving on bitumen.
Yes.
So what we learned later was that, you know, it had been raining for a week or two prior to that. So the sand was just rock hard.
Yeah, very firm.
We just cruised on in onto the barge, and the barge between Inskip Point and Hook Point there is only about 10 minutes, I think, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it was about 10 minutes. So once you get off the barge, you pretty much get onto 75-mile beach, and you're just driving north along that beach. You know, you're sitting comfortably on about 70, 80 kilometres an hour, and it is beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, there's no swimming, unfortunately, on the eastern side. It's quite rough, the seas. There's a lot of currents and rips. And it's very sharky as well. So everybody, including the rangers on there, sort of said to us, just don't swim in the water. You know, you can go ankle to knee deep in the water, but wouldn't recommend going any further because of strong currents and sharks and whatnot. So So the first place we stopped in at Fraser Island was Yurong. There's a resort there, but we stopped in there for a particular reason, didn't we, Martina?
Yeah, we tried their pie. So they have very good pies.
Okay.
Yeah.
Meat pies and pies, that sort of pies, meat pies.
Yeah, just meat pies. Because I'm not really into pies, but David was telling me, like, well, you have to try this pie because they are very well known, like, for their good pies, and I tried it and it was really good. So
I converted her.
So coming from you, and you being a five-star chef, I guess that's a definite compliment. So you really enjoyed the pies there.
Yeah, it was
so
good.
And what else? What else did you do? Because you were there. How many days were you there, or how many nights were you there on the island?
Was it 8 days all up? Eight days we spent there.
Okay. So, and you stayed in, like, in campsites, or did you try and find somewhere nice and private where you could just park up? Because you don't actually have a tent, so you can pretty much sleep wherever you, wherever your head decides to stop, can't you, really, in your vehicle?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Fraser Island is a place, there's a lot of beach camping on the eastern side.
Yep.
But everything needs to be booked, you know, so you have book it through the state government website, actually. So mm-hmm. you jump on there. It's cheap. It's $6.75, I think, per vehicle per night. Is it a vehicle or per person? But it's, yeah, $6.75, I think it was per vehicle.
Okay.
So, and we were lucky enough because the people on Fraser Island actually told us that it was unusually quiet for the time of year. So we were lucky. There was not many people around. We had each campsite that we were at was completely to ourselves, you know. So we had no other people sitting there running generators or music or anything like that. So the first spot we stopped in, it was a place called Wynnum Camping Area. There's different zones along the east coast.
Yes.
So once you book, you can book, you know, your zone 1, 2, 3, 4... 5, I think it goes all the way up to 8. Mm-hmm. I think the first two zones are quite early on the island, so you probably would just drive past them. But we sort of booked the third zone as the first camping spot.
Yes.
On the beach there, and that was fantastic.
It was very quiet. There was no one around.
Yeah. And we were close enough to places like Yurong and Happy Valley, you know, if we needed any sort of supplies. So Fraser is not a very remote sort of style place. If you are short on water or some sort of supplies, it's usually only about an hour and a half drive to some sort of a general store or somewhere where you can stock up. So, you know, people that sort of over-prepare, which a lot of my friends have done in the past, they've over-prepared. You know, we haven't got our second fuel tank and our 350-litre water tank yet and our third battery. I say to them, you know what, I've seen some stock standard cars on Fraser Island getting through reasonably fine, you know. So there's a lot of provisions that you can buy on the island. You can stay at private campgrounds. I think three private campgrounds on the entire island, which provide fully fenced areas, so it keeps the dingoes out of there.
Hot water, hot showers,
which Martina really indulged in when we were there at Happy Valley when we stayed. But we mainly stayed in the free camps. So the next camp along was actually Happy Valley, which was one of the private campgrounds. We had a shower, washed a few of our things, and in that campground you could have a fire. So Martina cooked up some, steaks. Yeah, I think you cooked up some amazing steaks on the charcoal, and you can imagine from her they were very five-star, and you get that really nice charred flavour from the fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because on the Fraser Island, you can't have fire.
Yes.
Only at this campground and
one more. Yeah, uh-huh. One more campground there was. Yeah.
Fantastic.
So from there, we moved up north.
Yep.
We sort of checked out all the sites, and I mean, the next big site is like Eli Creek. You know, it's this beautiful, crystal clear, freshwater creek, which is only about half a meter deep, and you walk it and It's absolutely beautiful, you know. It's one of those stops that once you're heading up the east coast and you're about halfway up Fraser Island, it's a must stop and a must see. You know, kids love it. Usually kids get on some lilos or inflatables and they float down back to the bridge, and then they get on the bridge and run all the way back and jump in the water again and float down.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful, yeah.
Okay.
So then what was the other one? That was the shipwreck.
Yeah, shipwreck, Maheno shipwreck.
Yeah, the Maheno shipwreck.
Yep.
Stopped that as well. That's another really cool little iconic spot on the east coast on Fraser Island. So stopped in there, took a couple of photos. I mean, there's beautiful rock features and coloured rocks along the way. You know, I just passed the Maheno that we stopped into. And then we drove all the way up past Indian Head, which is up near Orchid Beach.
Yes.
There's a little bit of a sandy, soft sandy section that you've got to traverse up there, but if you've got your tire pressures at the right pressure, you know that's easily doable.
Yeah, and even I was driving.
Even Martina was driving.
Oh, wow.
I mean, like, I can do it, so everyone can do it.
And your vehicle's a manual too, isn't it? Your vehicle's manual?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, bit... Martina in Europe, she learned only the manual, didn't she?
Yeah, we only have manuals back home.
Uh huh.
Mm-hmm. It was quite funny because when she got into an automatic, I think my parents' automatic back in Victoria, she said, "How do I drive with this automatic thing?" I said, "Easier than the manual." I said, "You don't have to use your left leg." So what happens when the gears change? I said, nothing. You just keep going.
It just goes. So no automatics at all over in her country. No automatics.
Well, there is.
But
I know, yeah, pretty rare.
When you go to, like, driving school, you have to, like, learn manual first, yep. And then you do automatic, but everyone has to learn manual.
Excellent. Well, that's good.
So, yeah, she had a go at, believe it or not, she had a go at Nogala Rocks, which is like the notorious spot where everybody gets stuck and it gets quite soft. And I drove through and I thought, wow, that was quite easy. And I said, I want to do that again and actually get some photos and some drone footage, which we did.
Mm-hmm.
And after we got the drone footage the second time, Martina turned around and she said, can I have a go?
Mm-hmm. And how did she go?
Oh,
fine. It was okay.
No, she loved it.
She's fine. Yeah. No problems.
I actually did a FaceTime with a lot of friends back home that said, you're going to get bogged at Nogala Rocks. And I'd FaceTime them as Martina was driving and they couldn't believe it.
Wow. So, driver now. So there you go, listeners. Now, that is David and Martina currently on Fraser Island, and Martina's become a four-wheel driver as well. Look, we're going to stop it right there because we've got so much more to talk about with Fraser, and we're going to be back on with more of Fraser next week, okay, with David and Martina. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to play them a great song. Now, this one's written by Colin Buchanan, and it's a number called Fishing Fraser Island, and this is going out to David and Martina.
Baz pulled out a noose, Tinny on top of the cruiser. Beer and esky, rods and tent. He hit the barge and off he went. Baz is in his element, fishing Fraser Island. And he strapped the rods across the bonnet. There's a fish with his name on it. String a tarp and pitch the old marquee. He's camping in a sandy dream, and he's fishing Fraser Island. He pulled her up past Eurong, and it didn't take old Basil long. He chucked her in and the line went tight. The mongrel put up quite a fight. You're in for a good feed every night.
Yum, yum, yum.
When you're fishing Fraser Island.
And he strapped the rods across the bottom. There's a fish with his name on it. String a tarp and pitch the old marquee. He's camping in a sandy dream, and he's fishing Fraser Island.
Run every year, and all the diehards hit up here. Flathead, whiting, brim, wahoo. There's prizes and it's quite a do, and they're never short of hooligan soup when they're fishing Fraser Island.
And he strapped the rods across the bonnet. There's a fish with his name on it. String a tarp and pitch the old marquee. Yeah, strap the rods across the bonnet. There's a fish with my name on it. String it up and pitch the old marquee. You're camping in a sandy dream, and you're fishing Fraser Island. You're fishing Fraser Island.
Song that was, listeners, Fishing Fraser Island, made famous, of course, by Colin Buchanan. Listeners, I really hope you've enjoyed the program Roaming Oz. I hope you enjoy listening to it as much as Lynn and I enjoy bringing the information to you and making this program possible. To Mr. Ian Jorgensen from last week's program, who did not contact us, Sadly, he has missed his 1 year supply of Enviro Wash from RV Guard. Okay, now that prize is going to be given away every month, and I've also got some books which I'm going to be giving away. One of our guests coming up in the next few weeks, Mr. Barry Bremner, is the author of a couple of books, and one in particular, Workers on the Wallaby. Now, I've got a few copies of those to give away. So when we do the interview with Mr. Barry Bremner, we are in fact going to be giving away a couple of copies of that book to a couple of lucky listeners, okay? So make sure you tune in and follow us on Facebook, okay? And keep up with what's going on Roaming Oz, okay? You can also listen to any past shows on romanoz.com.au, and we are also on Spotify. Now, if there is any places in particular that our listeners would like us to talk about, why not send us an email? Now, that's info@romanoz.com.au, and you can always, you know, address it to, say, Lynn or myself, Phil C, and we will do our best to source the information that you are inquiring about, okay? So that is info@romanoz.com.au. Listeners, we're going to finish up with a song now, and this is a beautiful song by Slim Dusty, and I really hope you enjoy it. The song is called A Friend in Need, and it's from his Odds and Sods album. Now, listen to the lyrics, folks, because if you are out there travelling on the road and you see somebody in trouble, why not be a friend in need, just like what Slim says in this song? We're going to finish up straight after this, listeners.
If you will open your heart to a friend who is in need, reach out your hand with a smile, you'll be playing the part of a true friend in need. You'll be remembered with love. Set apart, a helping hand can mean so much to a heavy laden heart. If you will open your heart to a friend who is in need, you'll be remembered as a dear friend.
Hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page, Spotify, or romanoz.com.au.
Tune in next week for more
Roman Oz.